Hello, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 1 of My Dog Will Eat My Face. And just to be honest, I'm not expecting many differences between Season 1 or Season 2. I just had to, pretty much in my mind, switch to Season 2 because I was running out of space, so to speak, of episodes to claim under just episode one, and to avoid capping that out and then losing the ability to create additional podcasts, I'm creating instead a new season, which starts me back again at episode one, well, at least for the season. So you might see some changes here and there, but nothing too dramatic. So I just wanted my listeners to know and be aware of that. Now, in today's podcast, I was sort of driven pretty avidly, I would say, by one of my listeners to really document all the particular oddities, so to speak, of my medical condition and how it developed and how it's changed and how my body has tried to save me from disaster throughout the years, so to speak. And that listener is none other than my father. So I was just on the telephone with him recently, and I kind of got into explaining the whole history of my health. I mean, he's obviously aware of my health, but I got into some details that were more or less kept between me and my doctors, not for any privacy or embarrassment reasons or something like that. There's nothing embarrassing whatsoever. I just really never dived into it when I explained the condition to family members or others who might be interested. So, with that being said, I'll start this new season with that detailed explanation of what the heck happened with me in the first place. Why am I in home hospice care, and why am I dying? And so, a lot of my listeners might already know the answers to that, but there are some additional facts and background information here that I plan to share that I don't think I've shared very much in the past, and certainly not in one episode or one description, so to speak, of my condition and the problems with it. So I'm going to try to conquer that goal today. Hopefully it will make my father happy. His note, though, was not just for him, I want to say. He really wanted some of this noted for the future, because he firmly believes, and I do too, that medical science could probably learn a lot from my condition and how it's evolved and what eventually led to my demise. So, with all that being said, and me agreeing with my father that that should be somewhere documented, I decided to go ahead and plop it in the first season episode. I found that somewhat appropriate, especially if there's some new listeners in season two. So that's what we're going to focus on today. And without further ado, I'll get started here in the first segment. Thank you so much. Thank you. beginning, God may have created light by saying it is there. In my case, in my beginning, it was pretty much SOL from the get-go. I actually suffer fundamentally from a protein C deficiency. And this issue may be the direct cause of all my issues up to today. But I'll touch on that a little bit later. So, a protein C deficiency is just a condition, a genetic condition, I believe, in which your body abnormally clots blood and can cause deep thrombus vein clotting, and also, in worst case scenarios, cause collusion of major arteries, and in some cases, such severe arteries that, or other blood vessels, that it leads simply to death. Now, they didn't know I was born with a protein C deficiency in the beginning. I just know that now, and I learned about it, golly, maybe 6 or 7 years ago. I learned about the deficiency from my cardiologist. No one else ever tested me for it, but he did. And that sort of explained a lot of the problems I was having. And again, I'll get more into that here in a little bit. Now, a protein C deficiency can cause very serious issues, not just deep vein thrombosis. It can cause collusion of major vessels where they can no longer provide blood to the body. And it can also cause, among many other things, pulmonary embolism where a blood clot that was abnormally formed somewhere in my venous system knocks loose and travels straight to my lung, and that could cause, pulmonary embolism, which is pretty much sudden death. If that happens, you're gone. So it's just a matter of minutes, I think, at most, that you might have to live. But I think, for the most part, it's pretty much instant death. Now, obviously, that has not happened to me. Otherwise, I'd be a very weird ghost. But that doesn't mean that it still cannot happen to me. That is a pulmonary embolism or something else serious. So I kind of live on eggshells, sort of, hoping that no unusual clotting of my blood vessels get knocked loose and travel to the lungs and cause an embolism. All I can do is hope that that never happens. And so far, it truly has not happened. So, before I even had a chance at life, this deficiency was in my development as a fetus, as a baby, a newborn baby. So the doctors at the time didn't know what a protein C deficiency was. They didn't test for it. And it pretty much was uh, not discover until, like I said, very recently. But the symptoms that it causes certainly were not brand new just a couple of years ago when I learned of this deficiency. They've been happening all my life, and my personal theory is that they've been happening even when I was in the womb. So that's my personal theory, because I was born without a right pulmonary artery. And you could say, yep, that's a weird congenital defect. It certainly is. But one theory behind that is that this protein C deficiency colluded the development of a right pulmonary artery and prevented it from being forming at the start. And that was the very beginning and the start of my health crisis for the rest of my life. So today I actually have some pretty significant symptoms from this genetic disorder of a protein C deficiency. For one, as I already explained, I think it might be why I was born without a right pulmonary artery. But also, to this day, I have no femoral artery in either leg. And on one side, it's completely missing. And on the other side, it is completely colluded and slowly being reabsorbed by the body. And I kind of wonder that maybe that's what happened to my right pulmonary artery before I was even born. But, yeah, anyway, the deficiency is still a major factor in my life, in that it is colluding and destroying blood vessels in my body. Now, when you do that, it produces, of course, tremendous strain on the heart to keep going. Now, in my case, in the very beginning, they implanted an artificial shunt. A man-made shunt. They didn't graft anything, which is the distinction there. And they used that to try to replace the pulmonary artery that was missing at that time. Well, last time I went in for a heart catheterization, they went in and looked at that shunt that's still there, and it's still working. Amazingly, after 43 years, it is still allowing blood to flow through it, but not very much. It was designed and built for a one-year-old, keep in mind. So, that being said, it is probably not helping all that much. But when they went in, they were hoping they could at least balloon it, maybe, to increase the size and offer some relief, but it was so encrusted. And it's just so old. They felt that if they tried to tamper with it, it would just crack open. And that would cause a severe emergency situation in which I would most likely die on the OR. So, needless to say, they didn't do that. But it's kind of interesting how my body has gone about its way to adapt, actually, to these missing blood vessels in my body. It's actually truly remarkable, frankly. I had the good fortune, at least once, of getting a chemical scan at my cardiologist's office to show me where my blood vessels are, what's functioning today, what isn't, could they do an operation to potentially save my life, etc. Well, what they found was actually quite surprising. Basically, in short, my body found a way to try and adapt and save my life. And what it did and what my cardiologist discovered, and he showed me the pictures, was truly no less than remarkable. So, what my doctor showed me was truly remarkable. What my body had done, due to the lack of blood flow to both the heart and lungs and the legs, actually, it had created an amazing cobweb, for lack of a better word, of peripheral blood vessels. So what that meant is when they did a scan of my blood vessels, they certainly could see, as I said, some of the major arteries missing, but then raised the question, well, why is he walking and why is he still alive? And what my body did is just created additional blood vessels that are completely unique. They don't exist on anyone else. It's just the nature of it. And other people do it too, and theirs is totally unique. So I'm not a special case per se. But it was truly incredible to see basically just a dense mishmash of vessels going every direction. And this was, in the first place, amazing because it did save my life. I don't know how my body managed to do that, to somehow know that it needed to create its own peripheral unique blood vessels to compensate for the ones that have been missing. So that's truly amazing. But the other amazing thing is, well, I shouldn't say it's amazing. The unfortunate thing is that this is partially why I could not qualify for any sort of surgery in recent years to help correct the blood flow to my heart to reduce the pressure on the heart and hopefully save my life. My cardiologist presented the option for surgery to both the medical team where he's at, the surgery team that he's at, and he's at a world-renowned hospital. He also shared it with Stanford and other surgical teams that are very well known for cardiac issues. But the problem was twofold. One, if they open my chest, let's say, they might have to dig through those blood vessels. And it is just such a unique and confusing, entangled cobweb of blood vessels, they won't know which ones to cut and which ones to not cut. And when I say that, they would have to cut these, at least some of these blood vessels, to get access, obviously, to the area where they wish to perform the operation. But they had no idea which peripheral being cut would instantly kill me, or another one that would just do nothing noticeable. They had no indicia, no indicator whatsoever between those two potential outcomes. So, because of that, and because the surgical teams also said at this point the pressure is so high in my heart and lungs that it's impossible to do a surgery. But yeah, because of that, they can't go in and do any surgery. It is just basically a total disaster of cobweb blood vessels that are entirely unique. And I'm not saying that just myself. My cardiologist flatly told me that my anatomy at this point is entirely unique, and it's just confusing as all get out. On my very last heart catheterization, my cardiologist approached me as I was recovering in the recovery room. Obviously, I wasn't recovering like in the McDonald's down the street or something weird. Anyway, he said right away, "Well, I'm just more confused." Which is not what you like to hear from your cardiologist who's there to save your life. But that's what he said after the catheterization. He said, "Well, I'm just more confused than ever." So all that really made any sort of surgery just utterly impossible. And incidentally, I have gone through emergency surgery not that long ago, per se, when I broke my leg and I severed my femur at the ball inside the hip. Pardon me. So they had to basically do a full hip reconstruction. So you can imagine what they went through if there's peripheral vessels there in the hip. I mean, I'd imagine there are some. But in doing the operation, they did tell me after the fact that I had lost a tremendous amount of blood, and that they were considering a blood transfusion at the end of the procedure. But based on my bouncing back, so to speak, and more or less feeling fine in my hospital room, they decided against it. They decided once was enough. So this little deficiency has not only, I think, impacted me from the very beginning, from when I was an infant. I truly think that something happened with this protein C deficiency, and it colluded the primary right artery, and it was reabsorbed or failed to develop. That's my personal theory, but I'm not a doctor, and I don't even play one on TV, so take everything with a big sack of salt. But yeah, anyway, it was it's a certainly unusual case. It was, and it still is. And because of it, a lot of surgeries are pretty much stuck dead in the water for me because, again, the anatomy is so different. So the symptoms I faced with this protein C deficiency are pretty obvious. I've had a rather lackluster development of my lungs. My lower lobe in both lungs is pretty much useless. My left lung has almost no oxygen transfer to the heart. It's completely useless. Basically, I'm operating now on only my right lung and have been for probably my whole life, just living off of one lung. But I knew that. I knew I was in dire circumstances ever since I was a little kid. And so that's why I lived my life really hard and made the best of the time I had here on Earth. But before I even get into that, obviously it caused a, that is, this condition caused a rather troublesome development of my heart, where it is very weak and it is just progressively getting weaker and weaker until where we are today, where it's extremely weak, for lack of a better phrase. I could get into the lab, the lab work that's done to determine that and the results I got, but I don't want to bore everyone, so just take me for my word. My heart has been damaged and weakened over 100% since my last blood test, which was a year ago. So that was a good detail of my symptoms there. So the heart's not developed very well. I've had shortness of breath. I could never play in sports. I would always get too winded and tired. And it was just, there was just a constant fear, frankly, that any moment I could keel over. I did have that fear as a kid. And, well, to forget about that, I try to do something else with my time. So I think that's the secret. If you get terrible news, don't willow or wallow in it. Willow in it. Yes. Don't turn into a tree for it. No, don't wallow in it and expect things to change or get better. Unfortunately, we have to play the cards we've been given to the best of our abilities. And people, I'm sure, perform way better than me. And I'm sure there's other people that feel the same way about me. So, anyway, it's caused all these developmental issues with my heart and lungs. And so that being said, I've gone into congestive heart failure. At one point already, my right ventricle failed. I went to the hospital for that one. And that's when my cardiologist told me I had about 3 years to live and I needed to start making final preparations. And that was about 3 years ago, maybe four. So, there was a very rapid health deterioration then, suddenly, very recently. I was healthy before. I've traveled the world. I've got a degree with honors, and I've been to Somerville College at Oxford to study as well. I've done all these things, but now it's just useless, which is the downside. I've done all these things, striving to make my life better and good for me in the time that I had, but It's actually caused, I think, an inverted case of depression with me. It might be kind of difficult to understand, but I think it makes sense. I'll open this particular segment to comments from the public on Anchor. You have to go to Anchor to do it. And you can leave comments there if you think differently. Now, I have to be honest and say that growing up with this deficiency and this disease and all the damage that it's done to me in my life was not necessarily all doom and gloom. I truly did enjoy my life before things just recently got so bad. I've been forced in home hospice care. Up until that point, I truly was enjoying my life and living it to the fullest. And so I'm very thankful for that, for obvious reasons. But I also learned another very important lesson that I want to share here today. I learned that it is of the utmost importance to tell the people you love, be it family, significant other, or friends, that you do love them. And I also think that it is extremely important to give thanks to all those who help you in various things that you might have help with. Be sure to say thank you, and be sure to tell people that they're appreciated for what they do. And I say that because when I was growing up and acutely aware of my own mortality, doing that became very important. Doing those two things became very important because it could very well have been my very last day. But that so too could be said for all of you listeners, whether you like it or not. So I think the lesson that I learned, unfortunately through this disease, which has been terrible, is now in a terminal stage, is something that can be applied to everyone's life. And I think flat out it should be. I think it's very important that people know that they're loved when they're loved and that they're appreciated when they're appreciated. People need to know that they make a difference in someone's life. And I think it's up to all of us, either ill or healthy, to ensure we do just that. Because we just don't know what would be our last day. So, treat it as much as you can as your last day. And be sure those around you know that you love them and that you appreciate them in your life. So I was lucky to learn that the hard way, I guess. I'm hoping through this podcast my listeners can learn that the easy way and apply it to their lives, because it's something I think that is indeed sorely missing in our day-to-day life. Especially, frankly, in the workplace, because I obviously have a 20-plus career, and there's absolutely not enough of thanks and giving appreciation to others for what they do for you in the workplace. They could be direct reports. They could be other employees in other departments. It could be peers at your same, rank within the organization. It doesn't matter. I think it's important to tell everyone who helps you in some way that you absolutely, really appreciate their help. So I just wanted to share that as well as my hard lesson from this terrible disease. And hopefully, again, you can apply it to your life without such a terrible disease forcing you to consider that. So with all that being said, I think I've given a pretty good summary of my health condition, the cause of it, how it's transpired in my life, and what I've been facing through all these years and still today in a final stage, according to my medical professionals. And I share this for just posterity. You know, they say once you put it out on the internet, it's out there forever. So perhaps someone somewhere, perhaps even you, could learn a little something from what I've shared here. Just because of the rarity of the circumstances. Hopefully, sharing just a little bit of what I went through will lead to someone else being helped in their life with a similar issue. So, wow, I just entered puberty. So, with that being said, I will wrap up this week's podcast after my vacation through the holidays. I do hope everyone had a happy new year. I certainly did, although I missed the countdown to midnight. It was after midnight before I noticed to check in on things, so oh well. But welcome to 2023. I hope it's a better year for all of us than 2022. I think I could safely say that's almost universally applicable. So, I appreciate your listenership profoundly. I sincerely mean that. Thank you so much for listening to this and perhaps my other podcasts. And joining me now on season 2 of this podcast, which I frankly thought I'd never get to. I'm just apparently a very stubborn person, still hanging in there with my health, so to speak. And I'm just not dead yet. And my plan is to keep recording to share the experience as much as I can until that final curtain does fall. So please follow this podcast and turn on notifications so you're notified of future podcasts, especially in this new season. And if you really want to help the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/mydogwilleatmyface and just drop a little shekel for a relatively poor guy now, living off disability and trying to make ends meet and sharing his story with the world. But even if you don't, you've already given me the most valuable thing, which is your listenership and listening to my podcast. So again, I sincerely mean that. I'm very thankful for you giving me your time today to listen to my babbling away. I will re-record a new episode, hopefully next week. There might be some deviation from that in season two. I might not stick to exactly a weekly podcast, but try to do it periodically when there is good content and new avenues to explore and share, so that you as the listener doesn't get any filler content, so to speak, that's just being posted because it's due 1 week later. But that you actually do get always consistently solid podcasts with good content that you can enjoy. And that's my goal. So it might not be exactly week to week, because we just don't know how things happen. But I'll try my best. But more importantly, let me try harder to give you new and interesting content when it's available. And with all that being said, I hope to talk to you again soon. And auf Wiedersehen.